Today, I'm joined by Nick Heath, also known as the Breathing Diabetic, and he joins me to discuss his holistic approach to diabetes management that revolves around wellness and not just the disease for episode number 56 of the Yoga with Jake podcast. Welcome to the podcast, where I interview world-renowned experts, top performers, and thought leaders in their field to provide you with actionable tools to improve your well-being. And today, I am thrilled to bring to you my guest, Nick Heath. Nick is a PhD, a breath coach, researcher, and writer living with type 1 diabetes. Nick's formal education is in atmospheric science, but he has spent the last 7+ years studying, teaching, and applying breathing principles in his life and with others. He is a certified Oxygen Advantage coach, a level 1 pranayama teacher, and a member of the Global Wellness Breath Initiative. Nick is the creator of the Breathing Diabetic and breathinglearning.com. Please enjoy my conversation with Nick Heath. Nick, how you doing?
I'm doing awesome. Yeah, I got to go surf this morning, so that that always puts me in a good mood. So doing good, yeah.
Well, I'm trying my best not to be jealous. If you saw what I was looking at right now, it's half frozen lake, and the waves are not surfable. But yeah. I've definitely jumped in there when it's this cold. But
yeah.
So Nick, I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about yourself. You're new to me, and so I was wondering if you could tell me about yourself and your background first.
Yeah, sure. So where to begin, right? Let's see. So, you know, on social media and stuff, I'm the Breathing Diabetic. So I usually, you know, like to introduce myself as a type 1 diabetic, because that kind of is what got me into all the breathing stuff, was my diabetes. But I was diagnosed at age 11. And didn't really care about my health, to be honest, until I was about 25 or so. I started eating and exercising better, and it changed my blood sugars, and it kind of gave me like an empowerment of, oh, there's a lot of stuff out there that could help me. I don't have to just, you know, your blood sugars always fluctuate as a type 1, but to have a little bit more control was pretty reassuring. So I started, you know, reading books a lot and become obsessed with like health and wellness, you know, just getting into that field. And actually, I started with yoga. I did some yoga classes at the university I was at, and loved it. And so I was doing that. And eventually, I became interested in the Wim Hof method, because that was popular on podcasts and stuff. And so I started doing that. And that opened my eyes to the power of breathing and how the breath can, you know, change your nervous system and your mind and things like that. But it wasn't until I discovered Patrick McEwen. So he has his method, the Oxygen Advantage. And that's what kind of really changed my life, because it was more with Wim Hof, it's great, right? He's got a lot of charisma. He does all this cool stuff. But with Patrick, it was more science-based, and it was, you know, talking about the nose and slower breathing or lighter breathing and oxygen and carbon dioxide and blood flow and all these neat things. And it worked. Like I felt better. I had way more energy. I was sleeping better. And I thought, this is crazy. It had to have been just a couple months after starting it, my blood sugars were better than ever. And I thought, what is going on? I'm just breathing different. This is insane. So I became kind of obsessed with that. I just started reading about it and trying to learn, like, how did that happen in my body? For a little more background, I'm a meteorologist, an atmospheric scientist was what my education was in. So I was always studying air and how air flows and stuff, but never thought about air in my body. And so I knew how to read papers and things like that. So I started just reading research papers and trying to understand them and then share it with people, because I discovered that there was all this science and I thought, oh, this is crazy. It's so simple. Let's just share. Like, if I can share it, I've never heard anyone talk about breathing for diabetes. So I started sharing it in that aspect. Today, though, like, you know, in 2024, I'm obsessed with it. I'm way beyond just diabetes. It's like my whole lifestyle of like just bringing mindfulness and improving mental and emotional health and all these different things that breathing can support. So I'm kind of very into it, real deep in the weeds at this point, but that's the roots of it, was starting with diabetes.
That's so interesting. And I was wondering if you could tell me, you know, what is diabetes? How does one become a diabetic? Difference between type 1, type 2? You know, if you could give me a quick elevator pitch, if you will, about, I don't know. I know they're big topics, but.
Yeah, sure. Let's see. So,
yeah. What is diabetes?
Okay. So diabetes is when you eat too much sugar. No, I'm just joking. That's what a lot of people say.
Yeah.
And laughing is my favorite breathing exercise. So don't take anything I say seriously. So diabetes is a lot of things, actually, but mainly it's for type one, it's when someone does not produce insulin anymore. And so my pancreas does not produce insulin, and therefore I am completely reliant on injections of insulin. And the reason it doesn't is that my immune system attacked my beta cells on my pancreas and destroyed them. And so I cannot produce insulin, and therefore I'm relying on injections. And that means that my blood sugars fluctuate a lot more than the average person, because when a normal person eats a meal, their insulin or their pancreas responds, releases insulin, and then that pushes that glucose or all the sugars into the cells and things like that. Mine can't do that. So I have to, you know, inject and wear an insulin pump. There's lots of different ways to do it and take care of it that way. For type two, which is, I think about 90% of people who say they have diabetes, or people with diabetes, are type two. I think it's around there, like 90. Mm-hmm. So only about 10% are type one. And so type two, the more common one, is like a metabolic dysfunction. There's a lot of things going on. There's insulin resistance. So your cells are less sensitive to the insulin you produce, and your cells and your pancreas does not produce enough insulin. So there's things like inflammation, there's excess oxidative stress, all these issues, and they kind of all culminate into type 2 diabetes, which means basically you can either take some sort of medication to help with it, or you can change your lifestyle significantly. And sometimes it can even be reversed. You hear that a lot. I'm not a doctor or anything, so I don't want to claim I know for sure that it can in every case, right? But it seems like a lot of cases it can be reversed. And yeah, they're both awful long-term. They both really mess you up, because when your blood sugars fluctuate, it can make your blood toxic. It can, as I mentioned, it can cause like excess oxidative stress, cause inflammation. It can mess with your emotional health and your mental health and things like that. So the complications of both of them are really similar. But for type one, the driving force is autoimmune attack on your beta cells. And for type two, it's more like a culmination of a lot of metabolic factors that cause it.
Okay.
That was not a good elevator pitch. That was way too long. I'm sorry.
Considering what a huge topic it is, that's really good. And and how many people are affected by diabetes, would you say? It seems pretty common.
Oh, yeah. I think, gosh, I don't know the number off the top of my head, but I think the latest, if you include like pre-diabetes, it's like 1 in 10, I think, in the United States, or even more with pre-diabetes. But it's a lot. It's about 10%, I think, of the population at this point. That's a ballpark. Don't quote me.
No, I know. So, yeah. I know. Asking you to pull out statistics, drop of the hat.
Well, that is something I should probably memorize, changing, but it's a lot.
I just wanted to kind of put that forward, is that it is common, and that a lot of folks are suffering from this. And, you know, when is it so bad? You know, you hear about folks who are usually, I think, later on in life, getting diabetes, where they lose a limb, or they lose, you know. So when is it a serious enough problem to seek out help? And how, like, is it type 1 diabetes that is that the worst level of diabetes that folks end up in these dire situations and life-threatening situations with diabetes?
Yeah, it's a great question. So let's see. with the complications, kind of the first thing that usually is like a long-term diabetic. So a person with diabetes who's had it for a really long time due to these fluctuations in our blood sugars and chronic high blood sugar and things like that, it can cause complications with blood flow. Your arteries stiffen up and you're not getting enough elasticity of your blood vessels and things like that. And you're not getting enough blood flow to your limbs, like the feet and the eyes. And so you hear a lot about like diabetic, retinopathy, where people go blind, or with blood flow to the feet and they have to get their feet amputated. And that is really, from my understanding, that's usually a long-term chronic high blood sugar that causes that. And what's interesting about that, I won't go off on tangents yet. That's it gets too bad too quickly. I would get off track. So that's kind of the big picture of why some people get complications, some don't. You know, I know people I interact with who have had diabetes for 50 or 60 years and they're still doing great. And other people who haven't had it as long, and just because they have a harder time with control, they have the complications and things like that. But as far as like one being worse than another, that's impossible to say, because it's different for each person. Okay. With type one, you could argue, both ways actually, that one's worse than the other. But type one usually requires it always requires insulin, so it might take a little more management from that side, because you have to take insulin. And if I just miscalculate something, it's potentially like it could end my life on the spot. There's been times when I've thought, two times in particular, where I really thought, oh, this might be it, because I messed up my insulin. And if you take too much fast acting insulin, it can end you. So there's a little bit more consequences if you're taking injected insulin, which could make it feel harder, perhaps, to some people. But people with type 2 have to inject insulin sometimes too. So yeah, it's hard to give it a label like that, but they both stink.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
And you mentioned seeking help, the first sign, right? Luckily now they screen people for prediabetes, because if you catch it, it's just like anything, right? The sooner you find it and the sooner you make corrections, the better off you're going to be. So, that's something to keep in mind, anyone, if you find out, right, that's a blessing in a way, because now you can actually take steps to make changes to improve it.
Yeah. Another call to go see your primary care more frequently, especially as us guys. I feel I've had this conversation so many times, but with the guys, a call to, it's worth going for that checkup and that regular visit to your primary care, just to check on these things. Yeah. Okay. And so how does someone, you mentioned that you have been diabetic since age 11, like how does that happen? And what was going on there?
So no one actually knows what triggers it. That's what's interesting. It can be like a virus. It can be any number of things something in the environment. We're not sure what triggers the actual autoimmune attack, but once it happens, they have no way of reversing it as of right now. And so when I was 11, I went into diabetic ketoacidosis, which just means that my blood sugars were insanely high. So they were, I think my parents told me, they were like, the doctors told them I was in the 700s, which if for folks who measure their blood sugar, it's not safe. And I was really close to grave consequences. And so that isn't good. And what happens is essentially you don't have insulin, your body thinks we need to get fuel. We can't get the sugar into the cells, so we're going to start burning fat for energy. And so you have ketone bodies in your bloodstream and you have high blood sugar, and it basically makes your blood toxic essentially. And I started vomiting. I actually was vomiting blood, which is disgusting. Sorry to say that on the podcast here, but and was just like, I got like a really bad flu essentially. And when I was 11, just felt awful. And eventually when my parents saw the blood, they said, okay, let's just take him to the ER. It must be something more than just the flu or just a sickness, And that's when they told me, oh, he's, you know, they did probably the antibody tests and saw my blood sugar was 700 and said, he's a type 1 diabetic, but they're not really sure what triggers it, which is unfortunate. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. And that's good to know, because I feel like most people think their diet's not healthy and therefore that brings on diabetes, but it could be a definite, you know, factor, right? But it's not necessarily the root cause all the time.
Yeah. So with type 2, then, you know, lifestyle becomes more important. There are some modifiable factors. Again, some of it's still genetic. And so there's definitely different levels of it. Each person's, it's going to be different individually. But for type 1, yeah, there's no clear cut association with anything. There's no diet, no specific, you know, strain of the flu or no strain of anything. Like, there's no reason that we know of that a person out of the blue, just their immune system starts attacking their beta cells. And we don't know why, which is pretty tragic.
Yeah.
It's usually in young age. So it's not always, but I guess, yeah, I don't even know if it's usually anymore. I don't know. But I know that, you know, it used to be called juvenile diabetes because a lot of times it happened in the younger stage. So, you know, it's a lot of young kids who get this. And it's, I mean, it's devastating when you're 11 or 9 or 3, you know, and you have to take insulin for the rest of your life. So anyways, it can be tragic.
Yeah. And so at age 11, you've got this diagnosis and you started going on insulin. And you have sense, right? As a type 1 diabetic, that's what you need to do to be alive. And
yeah,
so,
yeah, exactly.
And so take me on from there. You said you didn't really started implementing these, you know, lifestyle habits, and you got into breathing until what, later on? So how did this come about? You brought up how you got into Wim Hof first. And yeah. So tell me that journey. How did you come to this wellness route?
Sure. Yeah. So, I got a book, from my, I guess, stepfather-in-law, my wife's stepdad. And he's like, oh, I heard some guy on a podcast and he was talking about type 1. Maybe you'll find this interesting. And so I read it and I thought, okay, that sounds good. If that makes sense, I'm going to try it. Like it's really hard for me to explain this now because I'm just like, what was I thinking? But at that age, I mean, I was getting my master's at the time and I didn't read, like I did. I mean, I was obsessed with my meteorology. I would study, I would live in the library, but I never read books. I never did anything like outside of that. And I didn't realize all this information was just waiting for me. And so after I read that one book and I started, yeah, I discovered, you'll like this. I discovered there was these green things. They're called vegetables you can eat. And, you know, they'll actually help your blood sugar, right? Or these, you know, there's fruits and things. And so I started eating healthy and doing, like, you know, more resistance training and walking. And it made me feel great. And I thought my blood sugars went down. My hemoglobin A1C, which is kind of a marker of a 3-month average of your blood sugar, for me, it was always like in the low 8s or upper 7s, which is not that great. And, you know, I got it down in the mid 6s, or it might have been slightly lower just from like exercise and diet. And that kind of opened me up to saying, okay, this stuff works. It's important to eat well. And so I just, that, it's just that eye-opening experience. As I mentioned, I started reading books obsessively. To this day, I still, you know, read. I'm always reading at least one or two books because it's so much fun to learn and apply this stuff in your life. But so I read, that opened the door, and then I just, you know, stumbled into Wim Hof breathing, you know, and it's like anyone at that time, this was like 2014, you know, if you're listening to like the Tim Ferriss podcast, or, you know, he shows up and he's talking about, oh, you can control your immune system and all this really cool stuff. And so I tried it and really enjoyed it. And so that was like, okay, I can change my breathing and feel different. And that feels really great. The thing was, though, is that like I was doing it all from like a more, I don't know what the right word, it was almost like a spiritual thing. It was like I was now a postdoc. So I'd finished my PhD and I was a postdoc, and I was like, you know, really into the sciencey world on one side. And this was kind of like my outlet. My wife and I would go do yoga. We would do this like super intense hot yoga. And then I would do like, you know, breathing exercises in the morning, every single day I would, in my cold showers and things. And it was kind of like my yin and yang. I needed to balance out all that sciencey stuff. But what happened is, you know, I kind of became like a chronic mouth breather. I was always breathing it out of my mouth. At this point, I didn't really understand any basics of respiration. And so I was like drained of energy a lot of times. And when I discovered Patrick McEwen, who I mentioned, he wrote the book, The Oxygen Advantage, it just resonated. It was like, this is what I need. This is what I've been missing. Breathing through your nose, just simple things like breathe through your nose, breathe slowly. We start talking about the autonomic nervous system and how we can trigger the parasympathetic branch to elicit the relaxation response. And this turns out to do wonders for stress and for mental and emotional health and all these different things. So it just kind of opened up the floodgates of like, oh, there's all of these sides of like relaxation that you can get from a lot of places like yoga, Tai Chi. There's endless numbers, but breathing is one of the fastest ways to put the body into that state. And so it kind of took me on a journey to like trying to understand, you know, really what it comes down to is like stress resiliency, which everyone's into, right? Everyone needs stress relief and resilience to outside stressors. And that's really what it's come down to is like, you can change your breathing to in the morning or in the evening or anytime you want to put your body in this state of calm that can then, you know, change the baseline levels of your nervous system. It can help lower blood pressure and all of these great things all through the breath. And so that kind of just got me really fascinated with it. And then on the flip side, if you're into the spiritual stuff, right, you can use it for enlightenment, like, you know, like the Buddha did or whoever, you know, you can kind of look at it from any way you want. sorry to ramble on there. That was a long answer.
No, that's great. So for you, it started with now Wim Hof, a lot of usually it's hyperventilating type of breaths, right? It's the name of that breathing technique is not in my mind right now, but it's Tummo.
Yeah.
Similar to that. So it's like a kind of a hyperventilation usually, but he does several techniques, right? It's not just that, but that I do remember that one specifically, but is that what you started with, or what was the breathing techniques that you specifically found beneficial, or was there several? And then when you found there were several, I imagine then, okay.
Yeah. So Wim Hof was the first, and that is, I was the hyperventilation. You do like 30 big breaths and then you hold your breath and then you do it again and do it again. But he combines that, you know, not together, but you do the breathing on its own and then you go take cold showers. And then he also promotes meditation, he picked one method and says to do that one. And that's kind of the three pillars. Now, that was a long time ago. You know, I think it was 2015 when I was actually doing his official course online or something. So it could have changed significantly by now. I'm not sure. But so that was the basic approach. And that really helped me with like my mindset. You know, it's a very take control. I'm going to conquer the world type of stuff. But when I got into the stuff that helps me now and that helped me past that is really simple, like just slow breathing, like a 4-second inhale and then a 6-second exhale, you know, in and out through the nose or in through the nose and out through the mouth. Alternate nostril breathing. That's a real easy, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Yoga folks call it Nadi Sodhana. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. So that's the, you know, an excellent one. Brahmar Mari, humming bee breath, you know, you'll know that one too. That's an excellent one.
And what really is that? Can you explain that one?
The humming one?
Yeah. Yeah. Just for folks. Yes. Could you explain that one?
Yeah, sure. So it's really, it's a comfortable inhale through your nose and then you exhale and you hum at a kind of a high pitch to mimic the sound of a female bee. So it's like, it might be, I'm sure Zoom is going to block it out. But so yeah. And you just exhale at a very comfortable pace for as long as you can, but you don't want to be out of breath. So if the next inhale you feel, then you just went a little too long. It should be very relaxing and very, very comforting. And the sound of the humming is really soothing. And then it has some really neat effects on nitric oxide in your nose. And it's very stimulating for the parasympathetic rest and digest branch of the nervous system. So it's a really neat breath. And you only have to do a few. Like if you do like three of them, you'll feel super chill, real relaxed. So that's another good technique that I found really helpful. But for me, it was really just the slow breathing. 5 seconds in, 5 seconds out, 4 seconds in, 6 seconds out. 5 seconds in, 7 seconds out. You know, there's almost an infinite number of ways you could tweak it. But a slightly longer exhalation than inhalation, it seems to be a little bit more relaxing. And so that's what I focused on most of the time. Yeah, and just found it really helpful for stress, for sleep, for energy, for all things.
Yeah, I love all of that. Yeah, the exhale accentuated breaths, the psychological sighs, all kind of similar and shown to help to down-regulate your nervous system, right? And so this de-stressing component of the breath is super beneficial. It's always at your fingertips. You could always breathe if you're alive. And then, and so will you practice this in a meditation? Do you do this? You know, I do exhale. Once you start doing this stuff, I've noticed, I mean, I'm exhale accentuating my breath like all the day, I've noticed, but
nice.
Yeah. Or how do you have an intent? Is there an intentional practice you have, or do you do it when you walk, or do you just do it throughout the day? Do you like employ this when you're in a particularly challenging or difficult, stressful situation? Like, how do you implement this, or is it all of the above?
Amazing question. Yes. Yeah. It is sort of all of the above. I would say my most I have an intentional, you know, 20 to 30 minutes I spend every single morning that like I can't miss or I just won't be the same human. So I do that first thing in the morning. I either sit on a cushion, you know, cross-legged, like, you know, anyone else, or I lie down or I sit in a chair, just depending on how I feel. Mm-hmm. And I just do real slow breathing, like just simple, basic slow breathing, and then with some mindfulness and then some sort of, you know, ending practice of gratitude or just something to kind of like put my mind, or loving kindness, wishing people well, kind of a blend of breath work, if you want to call it breathing practice, and then some sort of like mindfulness or meditative practice. And that's like my... It's, to me, I'm a huge fan. I always encourage people to try it in the morning, because to me, it's like, you know, when you meet, so like you and I meeting for the first time, right? You want to make a good first impression. It's like you meet a new day every day for the first time. It's a brand new day you've never met before. And so you can make a good first impression by doing something good for yourself, doing a breathing exercise or a meditation or any yoga, anything that's like for yourself. And it'll just like a person will treat you kinder if you greet them nicely, right? The day will treat you kinder if you greet, if you greet it nicely. So I'm a huge fan of that. But like you said, throughout the day, yeah, I'm always kind of, there's like the micro moments. So for me, the one I use the most is just breath awareness. Like anytime I'm not doing what I should be doing, so to speak, like for example, I have a daughter, she's 4 right now. And I go to the park with her most afternoons, and, you know, I'm a human, right? I start thinking about work or this or that, and you start drifting, and then I can just come back and take one breath and say, okay, no, I'm here. This is where I am, right here at the park. And then it reminds me to be present with her. So it's like a real nice, like recentering, to use it there. Really interesting. You mentioned walking, because that's a great way to use the breath, counting your inhales and exhales with your steps. You might, you know, like 4 steps for an inhale and then 4 steps for an exhale, and kind of play with that to find a rhythm that works for you, because then you're getting physical exercise, you're getting meditation because you have to concentrate on counting, and you're getting the breath work all in one. And that's a technique called breath walking. So there's a whole book on it if people are interested, breath walking. The other though, I do want to talk about the stressful situations, because that's such an interesting one. Because a lot of people, that's what they want, right? They want to get into a stressful situation and have a tool they can use. And it's definitely true that it can be helpful. But most of the benefits that I've ever seen, and you know, people I've worked with and things, you know, it's more the daily consistency than waiting for a stressful situation. I come up with analogies. So it's like, to me, it's like brushing your teeth once you get a cavity. You know, it's not going to just fix it because, you know, you got a cavity. Now I'm going to brush my teeth. So if you wait for the stress to use these exercises, it might actually make it more stressful, or it might not work as well. What you need to do is train your body to elicit that relaxation response. You know, do it when it's calm, do it when it's easy, so that when a stressful situation comes in, then you can actually trigger it pretty easily because you've gotten used to it. So that's just Nick's two cents, my little word of advice for people who are interested in it.
Yeah, that's great. I now I was wondering, now when you started to learn these breathing practices, what sort of effect did it have on your diabetes or your perspective around diabetes?
That's, yeah. Okay. So it actually had a direct, or I guess a measurable impact on my diabetes. And that's what got me into the reading of the science and stuff. I don't, you know, I can't give exact numbers, but because I wasn't really doing a personal experiment or anything, but my blood sugars got better, much better. And my HbA1c went down to like 5.4 at one point, which again, that's abnormal. It's N equals one. It's just me, just N equals one. I don't want to pretend like everyone will see dramatic improvements, but, but that was remarkable. No change in diet, no change in exercise. Well, I guess a little bit of change in exercise because the breathing had given me so much more energy. I was walking more and things like that. So it was probably a culmination of factors, but so I did see a noticeable improvement in my blood sugar numbers and my sleep, especially. So my sleep was better. And that was probably a big driver of all the benefits. But you mentioned, you know, my perception around diabetes, and that is or perspective, you know, that's the biggest one, is like, when you learn you can breathe and change your nervous system and like change how you feel. Like, I sit down in the morning kind of tired, you know, I'm just woke up. And then by the end of it, I feel amazing and I feel awesome. It's like you learn, oh, I have some control, like, and that gives you control in other aspects of life. So with diabetes, especially when things throw you off, like I've had it for 25 years or 25 years now, which is crazy. And it's like, there's always a problem with a prescription. Like, there's always an issue with a refill or with a doctor pre-authorization. People will know if they have type one. It's like never type two, either one. Like, there's always some sort of, it's never easy. And you always want to throw the phone through the window when they tell you it's not ready and they can't get authorization and this and that. And so having something that has brought my baseline nervous system down so that when those events occur, I don't freak out, right? Or if I do get a little thrown off, I come back a lot faster. It's been really helpful. So like the perception of like, I have some control, I can regulate my emotions better, I can take control, I can, if I do get stressed, I know I can bounce back quickly. That has been definitely like the biggest help. And I think that's where, if anyone with diabetes listens to this, right, that's where you can get the most benefit, is like, having that sense of control.
I love that. And your morning practice that you started to unpack and explain, how long does that take? Is that different day by day, or someone who's just starting, what should they do? What do you recommend if someone is struggling with diabetes and they want to give this a shot?
So, you know, from everything I've read and found, the minimum like effective dose is about 10 minutes of a slow, gentle, easy breathing, you know, not like Wim Hof style for diabetes, that's like for studies that are available and things like that, it seems like 10 minutes of a slow breathing exercise is the minimum dose to feel benefits. For stress, for nervous system health, for cardiovascular health, that seems to be about right. With that said, anything's better than nothing. So if you can only do 5 minutes, right, that's okay. Or even 2 minutes, that's okay. Just to give you, you know, do whatever's manageable so that you can build that routine up and watch it grow. But if you can, you know, 10 minutes of slow breathing. We do have an app now called the Breathing App for Diabetes, which can guide you through that if you want help. But but really, you know, any type of just gentle, slow breathing in through the nose, out through the nose, or in through the nose and out through pursed lips, you know, just gentle, simple breathing can be really, really helpful for calming the nervous system. So that's what I would recommend people give a try, see how you feel. If you don't like it for some odd reason, if you, you know, it's not, you know, everyone's different. There's lots of other ways to get these relaxation responses, but breathing is just such a simple one. It does a lot of other things. So it just, it's a natural place to get started.
Yeah. And it's free and it's, yes. it's
always with you, as you mentioned, it's always yes. there, you're alive.
I'll say, as someone who maybe obsesses over sleep a little too much, because I know what it's costing us with bad sleep, right? Mm-hmm. We hear, I consume so much of that information that I think, oh, I better sleep or I'm going to die, you know? I think that kind of plays on my mind a little bit. But I'll say also implementing this breathing technique and giving myself permission at the end of the day when I lay down to go to sleep to employ some of these deep breathing techniques has helped me actually go to sleep. Is that cheating? Is that okay if you practice this at night and you fall asleep?
No, that's the best way to do it, right?
Yeah.
And in fact, you know, there is a couple of studies that have shown that it can be helpful for sleep if you do like some slow breathing before bed. And it just makes sense, right? You activate your body's calming response. You fall asleep faster, you wake up less and things like that. But yeah, so definitely do it then. And if you fall asleep while you're doing it, good. You know, your body's replying, you know, your body's saying, that's what I need right now. I need sleep. And so that's perfectly okay.
Excellent. And so, you know, what else has this breathing technique that you have really implemented in your life regularly now for what? Is it, how long have you been doing this for?
I've been doing some sort of breathing focused practice now since at least 2015. So I guess that's almost 9 years-ish, 2016. Wow. I think I started with the slow breathing in late 2017. So, so it's been a while. Yeah.
Yeah. And
Six or seven years.
Yeah. That's awesome. And so what other, benefits have you noticed? You know, you mentioned how that you did start to exercise or walk a little bit more, your mood had improved. You know, it seems to have a cascade effect. has that been your experience? And what other benefits did you notice that helped with your overall health and your mental health and therefore your diabetes as well?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely what you said, like a cascading of benefits. It's like, to me, it's like the seed for everything else because it regulates your nervous system, right? It's chilling you out. It's bringing you back to like a state of balance. And that can then allow you to, I mean, I'm like way deep herbivore, so I try to be a little bit reserved here because to me, it's like, it's really just shown me who I am. It's like, it's been a practice to help me come back more to me, where every day I get a little bit more like me. Like I find things, you know, I'm becoming the person I would like to be, so to speak. And it's not like, oh, I'm trying to be other people. You know, you're just learning more about your body, about your mind, what interests you, what doesn't, because you're learning like interoception and you're coming at it from a place of relaxation. Because a lot of times when we're in a chronic state of stress, we don't even know how to think straight, right? We all have been in that experience. Like you don't think right when you're stressed. So if every day you come back to a place of calm and ease, you just start to recognize who you are and things you enjoy. So that's like, you know, the big grandiose sort of the word is a picture of it. But
I love it.
You know, the practical stuff is what you mentioned, like better sleep. We talked about that. I definitely noticed that. It's not perfect. I'm not an 8 hour, never wake up, anything like that, but I sleep better than I used to. I definitely walk more. That was a huge one, as it like gave me a lot more energy. And me, I just walking, I gravitate toward walking. So I walk a lot more. And that's been pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. More positive emotions for sure. Like I'm my perfectionist. I used to be, I've never been like crazy hard on myself, but you know, I wasn't good with how I thought of myself all the time. Right. Mm-hmm. And so just giving you like a way more joyous outlook, and like seeing like beauty in things more often. Really an interesting one is like, I guess the word is like empathy, but like more just like a acceptance of humans, like just being like, oh, this, they're just trying to be a person in this world. It's a crazy world we live in, like being more accepting of everyone you meet and just kind of like being okay with that. And there was, it's weird because as I learn now, like there's researchers like Barbara Fredrickson, who wrote this great book, Love 2.0. And, you know, she's found that like, oh, if you have greater vagal tone, which is basically the tone of your, basically the activity of your parasympathetic nervous system, if it's working better, you can connect with people better and you can forge relationships with people better and you can experience more love in your life. And then when you're like, oh, well, the breathing practice does that. There's all this research showing breathing increases heart rate variability. And now this researcher is telling you people with higher heart rate variability and respiratory sinus arrhythmia, they experience more love and joy and awe in their life. Oh, now it makes sense that it, you know, it does that. So that's a big one, is like just connecting. The two other ones, well, I'll just say the one that's probably the most important to me and probably sensed it, right, is like I laugh more. Like I'm, and again, it's part of that more like joyous, but like just finding humor in things, and that really eases your mind, like more than anything. When like I do it, you know, I'm an introvert and I'm very much live in my head. And when you go out in public and say something really stupid or do something silly and you know, you beat yourself up for it for like the next 6 years, like you're always reliving it in the shower. And now I can just laugh at myself and think, oh, how funny was that, that I said that out in public or I did this silly thing. So humor really, really been a big helper.
Mm. So great. And and so do you have a mantra or anything? Or, you know, I've had teachers bring up different techniques in yoga that I notice that I keep defaulting back to when I'm at my like wit's end. I'm like, how am I going to breathe right now? Or I really don't know if I could even do this breathing practice right now. And then I find myself default back to the most simplest basic practices of exhale, accentuated breaths, inhale, let, like a mantra, inhale, say, let in your mind, and exhale, go. Or I had a teacher say, like, inhale, if I happen to have a lot of thoughts running around before I go to sleep, inhale, like, imagine, visualize, you know, your thoughts, gather them all up with your inhale. And as you exhale, like a cloud, it's beyond, like, it's floating away. Those sort of things. Do you do any of that sort of visualization, or do you mix it up, or do you have a mantra, or are you counting the breath? You know, I know there's certain meditations that I love, like yoga nidra, where you're asked to do nothing, the best you could, like deliberately disengage for once in your day, you know, at your permission to, please, you know, don't do anything.
Yeah, right.
So how do you do any of those sort of tricks or mantras, counting the breath, or do you mix it up or anything like that?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, the easiest one I do, and I mix this because, like, you know, I mentioned I do like a slow breathing practice. So usually I have some sort of tone that says breathe in, breathe out. It's like just a nice chime or a piano or something that tells me, that guides my inhales and exhales. And so in my head, I'll just say the words breathing in and breathing out from Thich Nhat Hanh. You know, to him, mindfulness, if while you're breathing in, know you're breathing in. While you're breathing out, know you're breathing out. And that's mindfulness, right? And so I try to bring that in just as like a reminder, not to let my mind just go wherever it wants, just like to be present with each breath I take. And I find that really helpful, breathing in, breathing out, just to bring your head back to it. I've also played a lot with like, you know, doing that same exact thing, but with like an emotionally triggered mantra. So like something that means something to me that is soothing. And that's really cool too. Like do a slow breathing practice and say some words of like, of affirmation or whatever, you know, and it doesn't have to be cheesy, but just something that's meaningful to you. And that's actually at Harvard, Herbert Benson, the doctor who discovered the relaxation response, you know, he advised people to trigger the relaxation response, come up with a word or a mantra and repeat it while you exhale. So it might be like peace or love every time you exhale, and just do that until it triggers this relaxation response. And so I've kind of taken that and done it with the guided slow breathing. And that's really helpful, like, for deepening the relaxation. But I don't have any like go-tos, you know, like if you're stressed and you don't want to do it, like, you know, to bring you back, other than, you know, the thing from Thich Nhat Hanh of just like, while you're breathing in, know you're breathing in, while you're breathing out, know you're breathing out, just to bring your body and mind back to the present moment, which is, yeah, it's unbelievable how ridiculously simple that sounds, but how challenging it is and how powerful it is when you actually do it. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's a thing in yoga philosophy, a theory that, you know, and I see this with the breath, that you forget and then you remember, because and throughout the day or whatever the situation is, it's like, oh yeah, there's that breath thing, but there's this concealment and revelation at play, I feel, with the breath. Oh, what's going on? Why am I feeling this way? And then I remember and I notice my breath, like, oh, you're not breathing, or you're short of breath, or you're hypervent, you know? And so I think sometimes it's a good mechanism to just check in on oneself. And sometimes even if you forget, it's okay. You give yourself that forgiveness. Oh yeah, remembrance. There's that breath again. And that's, I think, this inner interesting dynamic at play, I feel, with the breath.
Yeah, wonderfully said. And really, the breath is a reflection of your nervous system. It's a reflection of your mind state. So as you mentioned, like if you notice your breath, like it can kind of give you signals of like stress. You can, for me especially, like I'll tune in, and if I feel like my breathing feels a little off or shallow or almost a shortness of breath, usually it means my blood sugar is getting low and my body's kind of going into that like sympathetic, hey, you need sugar. But before I feel it, like before I rationalize it, that's how my body shows me. That's like the very first sign. So a lot of times if you do use the breath, you can kind of tune into it throughout the day and listen to the messages it's telling you. It's reflecting something, you know, it's reflecting your mind or your nervous system. And that can help you kind of tune into what maybe if you're stressed and you don't even realize it yet.
Yeah. I imagine as someone who is a type 1 diabetic or a diabetic in general, the stakes are so high all the like seemingly all the time. Don't forget this or that, your life depends on it. Like I said, with sleep, but you know, stakes are much higher as a diabetic. And so to have something that helps you not panic, I imagine is quite the superpower.
Yeah, it kind of feels like that sometimes. Doesn't fix everything, but yeah, it's definitely a good tool for anytime you're stressed. You know, as we mentioned earlier, once you get that baseline and you know how to use it, you know, in preventing the stress, and then definitely for understanding your body and high and low blood sugars, it can be interesting to just notice your breathing. Obviously you still test your blood sugar and you still take insulin, you do all the normal things every diabetic does. You just you might sense things that are off through observing your breath. So it's really neat.
building that self-awareness up through the breath. And now, what are you currently working on? Are you offering, you mentioned an app, are you currently teaching folks this, your experience with this as someone who has diabetes and how you found it profoundly beneficial? How are you spreading the word? And tell me a little bit more about what you're up to and your app.
Awesome. So yeah, I do. So I'm on social media, like Instagram is really where I spend most of my time. And I share a lot of information there, both studies and just kind of, quotes and personal thoughts about breathing. So if people are interested in learning, they can get some cool stuff there. I have a newsletter, which is free, the Breathing 411. So at thebreathingdiabetic.com, you can get that if you're interested. And I do some coaching. So one-on-one, if people are interested, I don't have a ton of time for it because it's a lot of work, right? I try to research and really help people. I can only take a limited number of people. But there's a link on the website for it if people are interested. And then finally, yeah, the easiest way, right? If you have diabetes, we have the breathing app for diabetes now. Mm-hmm. And it's a partnership with the breathing app, which has been around for many, many years now and has tons and tons of users. It's a really simple, awesome, eloquent app created by Eddie Stern, a yoga teacher, Eddie Stern, and a few others. Sergey and Max and the folks over there, they're so awesome. But now we've put together a whole team just for diabetes. We've made a separate app called The Breathing App for Diabetes. And it's essentially a 28-day program to help people with diabetes reduce stress and live a better life, right? And so it's me talking. So I give you some one or two, 3 minute science lessons each day. And then Eddie has a very soothing voice and he comes in and he guides you through the breathing exercises and it's excellent. So if people are interested, you can go check that out. It's on the App Store and all that. I don't know if it's in every country yet. I can't keep track of it all where it's available right now, but it's definitely available in the United States and in Canada and several other places in the UK and things like that.
Beautiful. And it's a challenge in there. So there's a, like a, you said a 20 day,
28 days. So four weeks.
Excellent. And it's only a couple minutes a day.
So the lessons from me are a couple minutes and then the breathing is between, let's say 10 and 15 minutes most days. Cause basically Eddie teaches you alternate nostril breathing, slow breathing, alternate nostril breathing, and humming. Those are the three breaths we use. And then you build that into a practice where every day he's kind of teaching you how to get to those points. And then once you learn them after the first few days, then it's just kind of go. You do a little quick body scan to relax your body, do some alternate nostril breathing, and then some slow breathing, and you're done. So it's it ends up being about 10 to 15 minutes every day of breathing.
Excellent. I love this. So that's just something manageable, 15 minutes a day at tops, and you learn a lot about the science-backed benefits of breath, and then you learn the actual practice and you're guided completely, you're fully guided by someone. And so that sounds perfect. Awesome. I'm gonna go check this out. Is it so it's on the App Store, folks could go on there.
Yep. Okay. If you search The Breathing App for Diabetes or just TBA, for The Breathing App, just TBA for Diabetes, you can find it.
Great. And folks will, in your experience, they'll experience benefit within that 4 week.
Oh yeah, for sure. Okay. We've done, we did some testing with pilot groups and stuff, and the average reduction. So we measure everything through perceived stress. So we use the perceived stress scale, which is a really well documented, questionnaire that's, got hundreds and hundreds of studies that have used it now. It's just 10 questions, but you take it before and after. And we've seen on average, the participants have about a 40% or 44% reduction in perceived stress. That's pretty big. That's pretty massive. So I don't know, that might change with bigger sample sizes and stuff, but you know, I've seen in other things I've run 30%. So, you know, big improvements in perceived stress. And the reason that's important is that the way you perceive stress influences everything. It's been associated with inflammation, with metabolic dysfunction. So we're doing it because we don't want to ask people with diabetes to wear something, to measure something, because we measure enough stuff all day with our blood sugars and our insulin and blah, blah, blah. So right. We were like, what can we do that's easy, that has meaningful impacts on our body? And so this was what we chose. But in any case, I kind of went on a tangent there. But yeah, if you do the breathing exercises every day for the 28 days, you're almost guaranteed to improve something. You're going to, you know, you're going to improve it some way.
Yeah. And do you, I don't know if you bring this up in the app, but I would suggest folks, when they do something like that, maybe just pay attention to like what we brought up, the other cascade effects like will happen naturally. You might not even realize it till you do a little scan of your day, like, oh, right. I am walking a little bit more, or that difficult conversation with my parents or brother went a
right,
little bit
exactly.
better.
Precisely. Or, that's it.
Yeah. And, or just like your sleep is better. Those sort of things, you know, are all come into this bigger whole being puzzle when it comes to diabetes then.
Phenomenal. Yep. Exactly.
Excellent. Wonderful. Is there anything else you want to put out there for folks about diabetes and this wellness approach to it that you've really taken and it's helped tremendously and it's worth trying, it sounds.
Just breathe slow, right? Nasal breathe, breathe through your nose, breathe slow, and try to laugh a lot and you'll be good.
Love that, Nick. Nick, this has been so great. I'm so happy that you took the time to tell me about yourself and all this wonderful work you're doing. And you're already helping a lot of people. And I hope this helps you make a greater impact. It means a lot.
Thanks a lot, Jake. I appreciate it too.
All right. Take care. Awesome.
Thanks.
Awesome, Nick. So thanks,
awesome,
man.
Yeah, that was awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in. If you found my conversation with Nick to be helpful, informative, if it inspired you, please give the podcast a like, a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and subscribe. You can find me at Yoga with Jake on all social media platforms, especially Instagram, and on my website, yogawithjake.com. Until next time, take care.